You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Continue. On a Thursday, we talk transition. Joining me, and again, I want to thank Matt Parker for coming on. We don't have Army guys on very often, so Matt joins the few, the proud. And so things get back to normal right now. Joining me right now is Seth Jordan. He's the chairman and founder of the Dog Tag Brewing Foundation. So, Seth, first of all, good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning, Matt. Thanks for having me.
No, not a problem. Justin Constantine is a mutual friend of ours, and he introduced us and then called me and said, "Hey, man, you got to meet Seth. He's out there doing great things." And so wanted to have you on. First of all, Seth, we need to learn about you. Born and raised where?
I was born and raised in Rhode Island, and ended up going to college at Clemson University down in South Carolina.
Wow. Hold on a second. Rhode Island is the size of Camp Pendleton, yes?
Yeah, I figured that out. But, I guess that's why I loved it all that time.
Somebody told me. And Rhode Island is most famous for what?
Let's see. I would say we're probably known as the Ocean State.
The Ocean
and
State.
We're also, but we're known for Dell's Lemonade and Coffee Milk.
Wow. You know what? One of the things I love about life is every place is known for something. And you know what? You'll hear, we're home of cream of wheat. What did you say? That's right. And so it's just funny. Rhode Island, though. Not too many people from there. So it's nice to have somebody on. How did you get to Clemson? That's not in your neighborhood. So what got you to Clemson?
You know, women and weather. It's still a reason to go to school. No, I just fell in love with the school. I had a friend of mine who was about a year older than me who went to the school. I went to visit it. It's just a great atmosphere. It's a character building school. Being, like you said, Rhode Island's really small. But it was an opportunity to kind of get away, spread the wings. And, it was one of the best decisions I've made in my life.
And they've got a pretty good football program, I hear.
Yep. Technically the best. So, no, it was a great opportunity. You know, this was a launching pad for, I mean, I'd been all over and ended up living the life of a Marine, so kind of stationed all over. And now I currently reside with my wife up in Bozeman, Montana. So I kind of hitting it all.
I will tell you what, just a quick word about Clemson football. You know, what a great game, and that the way that program's been built by Dabo Sweeney, and I mean their game against Alabama, man, what an awesome! It's like a men's game, you know, and really, yeah, it was awesome though. It was awesome.
Well, I was fortunate to be there.
Really?
And I was fortunate to be in last year's national championship game where Alabama won.
Right.
So I mean, it was just kind of a. I think that, like you said, that was a great story about how these young men really came together, had a perfect season. They came up short. They had been really building this program. They could have put their heads down. Instead, they said, we're going to be back, and they did it with vengeance, and they took it all. So I'm pretty proud of them.
That was awesome. And, how does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
You know, growing up in Newport, Rhode Island, it was a big Navy and Marine Corps town. And it was just one of the things a lot of my friends' fathers had, you know, was in the Marine Corps, or the Navy. So I kind of had an affinity for it. After I graduated from college, I got a job in New York City, 2001. I lived about a block from the World Trade Center. I was in New York City when it happened. Just changed my life, really kind of set what was the new priorities for me. And, left directly for Officer Candidate School from Manhattan. I was out of the OSO office on the USS Intrepid on the west side of Manhattan, if you're familiar.
Yep.
And went to Quantico and never looked back. So you know, that's probably the second best decision I ever made. So.
All right. Talk to me about you can be many things in the Marine Corps. First and foremost, an infantry guy. How do you choose a career path in the Marine Corps?
You know, so I went in as an aviation contractor. It's funny because coming out of New York right after 9/11, I mean, there was just a lot of guys raising their hand.
Right.
And it was kind of funny that, you know, when I went in there, the OSO officer was like, hey, unless you run a, you know, perfect 300 PFT and come from an Ivy League school and you got a couple other wickets that we're looking to hit, I don't know if I can get you in soon. And then my time, I was working at ESPN in New York, and the Marine Corps was actually one of my advertising accounts. So I had the fortunate privilege to talk to the two-star at MCRIC, and he said, if you want a contract, we'll work on that, but you got to do the hard work. So they gave me an aviation contract, ended up going to flight school down in Pensacola, became a Huey guy stationed at Camp Pendleton, but I did have the pleasure to serve with the grunts. I was an air officer over at 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines. It was probably the most rewarding tour and experience of my Marine Corps career.
We're going to talk about that. What who was the two-star?
Major General Rodriguez.
Okay.
And I think, if I recall from history here, he was at the time the highest-ranking Hispanic officer in the Marine Corps. And just a hell of a gentleman. And, again, he said, hey, no one's going to carry your pack. If you want it, I'll get the attention of the OSO officer, but you got to do the hard work. And I went from a barely functioning PFT to a 297 ship PFT to OCS. And the rest, you know, like you said, you got to do the hard work. And, I really appreciate that lesson and that opportunity that he gave me.
All right. Talk to us about, you come in and you're a Huey guy. Is that what you said?
I was a Huey guy out of HMLA 267 and HMLA 469 out of Camp Pendleton.
All right. So talk to us about you deployed to Iraq, Afghanistan. Where's the first time you go to war?
Yeah. Well, my first tour, I was on the 11th MEU, so caught a little bit of everything. Kind of Horn of Africa, Middle East, humanitarian assistance, kind of push into Kuwait, thinking we're going into Iraq, don't get the call, very disappointing. Come back, immediately volunteered for a factor, and then went to Afghanistan. So I was part of the initial MEB push into Afghanistan 2009, and then was a part of the Battle of Marja, Operation Mashtarak. I was the regimental forward air officer for that, which was, again, just an amazing time in the Marine Corps history, and to be a part of that was kind of a blessing.
Okay, you do. You were 2-7, did you say, as the air officer then?
Yeah, so I started off with 2-7.
And what? Okay, what year?
Sorry.
What year was that? And let me tell you.
2009.
Okay, and then because the reason I asked, I was there in 2010-11 with the 1st Marine Regiment. We ran that battle space, and I just wondered if you 2-7 had came back there, and wondered if you were still.
Yeah, I actually, so I was with 2-7 at the time, and Newman was the CEO of 7th Marine.
7th Marine.
And RCT 7 was going forward, was kind of the first RCT to rip out RCT 3,
right,
which was the special purpose MAGTAF, if you recall from the history there, in early 2009. So 7th Marines, they were looking for JTACs and FACs. I volunteered to go, so I kind of went forward and kind of became a FAC for hire. Started plussing up a lot of different operations. Had done some work with, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines, and 2-2, and 1-3, and a couple other, you know, Marine units that were in and around the area. And then with 7th Marines, really part of the jump for the CO and pushing forward. So it was, you know, really an interesting time being on the ground and then coming back again in 2012, this time in a flying tour, serving in out of Camp Bastion, serving the entire Helmand Valley.
Give me a couple lessons learned. Give me one from your aviation time in combat. Give me a lesson learned from that. Only one.
You know, I tell you what. For me, I guess what I'll say is it was the most rewarding. It's the most rewarding job to provide close air support and medevac escort. I mean, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter what the mission or what's going on in the geopolitical, you know, spectrum. It is time now. You're providing something of value. And when you accomplish that mission, it is the most rewarding thing you could ever do. And, quite honestly, I miss it. And I think a lot of guys do. I think that's what a lot of guys struggle with too. When they get out, they're like, wow, you can never do something that rewarding. And that was kind of a long answer to your simple question.
No. It's the right answer. The, and there's a couple of follow-ups to it. One is, for guys who lived a purpose-driven drive, I can say it, for men and women who live purpose-driven lives, when they get out and start looking for something, I guess it takes us towards the next part of it. But how important it is, do you think it is, to get pointed in a direction where you find purpose again?
Oh, it's everything. I mean, I think that's just how we're hardwired, especially as Marines. You know, we're biased for action. We're biased for service. We kind of love the opportunity to be a part of a team, get a mission, receive it, take it on, and then go out there to work together to accomplish that. And I think that does affect a lot of guys and gals when they get out. It's like, hey, what's next? And it's not about making a lot of money. It's about really finding that purpose and getting excited to come out, you know, get up and get out of bed every day. So I do think it's everything. And I think that that's where I think that's why veterans are struggling right now with landing and staying in their first job. I think the recent statistic I saw was something like 50% of transition veterans will leave their job within their first year. And there's a lot of different factors behind that, but I think one of them is finding that job satisfaction, or is the purpose there for them.
You know, I've heard that statistic. I'd be curious to see it contrasted with what is it in the civilian world after coming out of college. How long do people stay in that job? So you kind of get the marginal difference. And also, I would tell you the one thing I've learned, I've done this for over 10 months now, is that we don't put enough emphasis on being happy. And in order for you to be happy, you have to live with the same kind of purpose in the future that you've lived with in the past. It's going to change. So where do you find purpose? And if you think you're just going to go, especially combat guys, if you think you're just going to go to a job and to make money, and your brain, if your brain's not intellectually engaged in that thing, where do you think your brain's going? And it's going to bad places. It's when you get unhappy. It's when you say, what did I do this for? I hate this.
Yeah.
And that's when you look around and you go someplace. I don't think we put enough emphasis on that in our own transition, saying really give it some thought, because a good life is spent getting up, going to do things that you're passionate about. And you'll evolve that into something that will support you. So kind of interesting stuff.
No, I agree with you. You know, I mean, just one other tidbit for your listeners is, I mean, this is, again, I can only speak from my own experience,
right,
but, you know, my wife and I made a decision to be happy first and then find a profession second. So, I mean, and what I mean by that was we made the conscious decision to move to Bozeman, Montana from Camp Pendleton. You know, I didn't want to stay in San Diego, take the contractor job,
right,
or go work in some kind of field that's semi-related to our experience, and it's just kind of like an extension except in a GS capacity. And again, no offense to anybody who does that,
right,
if that's right for because their situation is, hi, my kids are here, I want to stay back in San Diego, et cetera, that's fine. But for us, we weren't at that point, we didn't have children, but we have horses, and we have this little horse ranch. We wanted to be happy, wanted to be close to family, and then decided to pursue a profession that coincided or was consistent with, like, what you just said was the values or why and how you wanted to lead a, you know, your life in the second post-military, post-Marine Corps type environment.
My guest is Seth Jordan. Got out of the Marine Corps as a captain, major. What'd you get out of, Seth?
I was a captain.
Out of the Marine Corps as a captain, a Huey guy, and just a note. I was one of the guys who did current operations in and around Marja for the 1st Marine Regiment 2010-2011. One of the things that is incredibly moving about going to war as a Marine is when somebody's in a zone and they're wounded and you're getting updates and you're feeding those updates to the medevac. And normally you don't try to send a medevac in to an LZ if the LZ isn't cooled out. What the escort's job is to get after anything that isn't cooled out and to cool it out so the medevac can take place. And, you know, and sometimes it's hairy stuff because when you inform the medevac, hey, he's crashing, that means we need him now. That means there is no time for the Cobras to, you know, do gun runs on tree lines. And I'll tell you what, it's incredibly moving and humbling when those guys put their nose down and they go in and they risk their own lives, the aircraft, to go get somebody. And that's not done on an infrequent basis. They do that stuff all the time. And it's that team that is, as much as we give aviators a lot of grief, they prove it all the time, how much they mean to our organization, and what kind of team we are. So, I got a chance to see you guys work, Seth, and I'll tell you what, pretty inspiring, pretty moving.
Oh, thanks. You know, like I said before, it was, you know, that was the most thrilling experience, just being able to do that. I mean, sometimes, just like you said too, like our presence alone, when we show up to a gunfight, a tick, or we used to call them improvise, right? Immediate priorities, and right. We think the situation's about to go down. You know, our presence alone with the rotor noise is sometimes enough to defuse the situation, and hey, that's a win too. So happy to do it. Loved it. Loved every minute of it. Hated how many medevacs I had to do,
right.
But at the same time, everyone that we did. I used to have a motto: no one dies on my watch except the enemy. And, you know, we batted 1,000 there. So that was, it's kind of a rewarding experience when you flew almost 300 missions. And a lot of those times, you know, you didn't know what the outcome was going to be for that guy or who got picked up. But at the same time, I think we did a good job. And that's not just me and my specific guys that I flew with. I am going to go on a little tangent here. Just every HMLA, Bubba, whoever served in Iraq and Afghanistan, constant deployments, nonstop, both East Coast and West Coast, from 2003 straight all the way till now, those guys are just amazing. And there's just so many great stories out there of guys doing so many heroic things, and you just never hear about it. And I'll make one quick plug. I just don't know why the Marine Corps is so cheap with awards. You know, it's a 30-cent or 50-cent piece of ribbon. It means so much to someone to say, hey, thanks for the work that you did. And I don't know why we do that. And then nothing against our Army brothers and sisters, but they hand out those things
like
left and
right.
And that's not to say that those soldiers didn't deserve it, but the Marine Corps is a little stingy. I don't know if you want to get on that topic, but
we can. We can. I mean, look, it's just the way we are. You know, I mean, guys have Navy crosses that ought to be Medal of Honor. Like, what are we, less valorous now? We don't fight the same way that we used to? Come on. What does he have to do to get a bronze star with a V? Are you kidding me? It's a joke.
I just think that, I don't know. I just, you know, I would put in a situation or try to write somebody up. And of course, I think we do it to ourselves, and that's what I'm getting at. If someone took the initiative to write an award and said, hey, I saw this, witnessed this, this is fantastic, this is amazing, that's just something that guy is going to get to tell his grandkids about. And yeah. I don't think it cheapens the award process. I'm not saying we got to start handing out Navy crosses and silver stars to everybody, but you know, the COM Vs, the bronze stars with Vs, there was a lot more heroic stuff going on out there, especially in a time when guys are doing foot patrols in cities like Marja. They're completely ridden with IEDs and estimated 2,000 enemy fighters waiting for us inside the city. I think there's a lot of guys that deserve a lot more credit. And that's just my two cents.
No, and we all know it. In fact, I remember sitting on an awards board in Ramadi in 2004, and sitting there going, "Look, does everybody know that guy can have one, but you don't have to take yours off and give it to him? You know that, right? You get to keep yours, and he can have his too, right?" Hey, Mac, don't be a smartass, okay? No, no, it's like this isn't your stash. That if you give one, you're somehow diminished. He can have one too. What is going on here? And I'm talking about listen to this. I interviewed the kid. I did something similar when I got off active duty the first time. I moved my family to North Dakota, and I would tell you what, the quality of life in small town America is awesome. Your kids grow up different. They grow up as small town kids, and people know them. Hey, you're Mike McNamara's son. Uh-oh. And it's just way different, and it's awesome. It's awesome. And I don't know. It's just this kid's name is Nagel. He's a PFC Lance Corporal in Ramadi in 2005. He's up on a building on Route Michigan, which was like Thunderdome City. And this Michigan's, you know, it looks down on Route Michigan. And on this day, it's a four-story building. He's on the top with another guy. They get engaged from the right. And so now they're hooking and jabbing with machine gun and RPG fire. And so it's on. And with that, a tandem vehicle-borne ID comes from the other direction. And the first vehicle is a white Opel, always. And it detonates right at the gate of their compound. And it knocks everybody to the ground. Nagel's up on the fourth floor. He's, you know, they're like, what was that? Because it's about, what, I don't know, 3, 4, 1, 5, 2 rounds that detonate. And it's a big boom, even if you're on the fourth floor and removed from it. So he gets up, and he looks, and he sees a water truck coming through the smoke. And he says, oh, my God, I know what that is. That's number two. That's going to drop this whole building. Now, there's 20 Iraqis and 15 Marines in the building, so 35 guys. Nagel, with no order as Lance Corporal, engages the vehicle, kills the driver through the windshield. He sets off his dead man switch, and they had a drone overhead because of the tick going on, watching it, and it looks like kind of Lego domino thing. This thing explodes, and like buildings adjacent to it just fall over. Nagel got a Navy com with a V for saving 35 guys. And it's like, okay, if Nagel jumps on a hand grenade and saves one guy, he gets a Medal of Honor. But if he does everything we train him to and he saved 35, how does this rate? Who thinks that this is a Navy com with a V? It's crazy. And you just shake your head. I absolutely, positively endorse your position, Seth.
Yeah, you know, just a quick, if I may, just a very quick story. So I was in 2012 in Afghanistan. I was at Camp Ashen. In fact, I was there intimately, right up and close, when the Camp Ashen was attacked with 15 armed insurgents who basically destroyed about $400 million worth of damage. I think it was like 6 or 7 Harrier jets were killed, to include the commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Rabel, one of the finest Marine officers you'll ever meet, and another Marine. And my friend, Adam Coker, who's now a major in the Marine Corps still, he launches on the tick and shoots danger close, within 10 meters, inside the wire on our own flight line, right on top of our position, and kills 5 of the enemy fighters. And all he gets is an air medal. And it's like, it was mass chaos. I mean, the whole base was under attack. Nobody knew what was going on. There's 400-foot flames. It's darker than heck. A lot of heroism that night. And here he is, he and his crew, save the day, who kill these guys inside the wire. I mean, inside the wire. This hasn't been done. I don't even think it's been done in Vietnam. I mean, maybe it has, but to my knowledge, it definitely has not been done since Vietnam. This has never happened before on any branch of service. And again, he gets the lowest ranking award you could possibly get. So it's just kind of interesting to me. But that's just, I guess I can say that now that I'm out.
You can. You can. You're entitled to. Email question. Well, is your brewery, this is from somebody from a guy that is known as Montana Man. He's a retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. He was in Afghanistan in 2010-11 with us, with the 1st Marine Regiment. Is his brewery in Bozeman? So where's the brewery, Seth?
So, yeah, to explain this. So what we did was we built Dog Tag Brewing as a premise and a movement. The physical brewery is not here in Montana. The foundation, the 501c3 charity, is located here. It's headquarters in Bozeman, Montana. We have partnered with Pabst Brewing Company, who's America's largest owned beer company, to do all of our production and distribution. So we utilize their facilities and their outlets. So there's no physical on-premise to visit here in Montana.
Okay.
That answer.
All right. Let me ask you one more Marine Corps question, and then we'll talk about entrepreneurship and whatnot. The question is, give me a lesson learned from your ground tour. I do a segment here called Things I'd Like My Sons to Know Before They Went to Combat. And I have two sons, both of them infantry officers, both in the Marine Corps. And, I thought about that. What would I want my sons to know before they went to experience this? And so I'll ask you, give me one lesson, that you would, give to young leaders in the Marine Corps, based on your ground tour.
Only one. Leadership. I thought I knew what leadership was, but until I had that time that I served and became part of the battalion staff and became part of the regimental staff and had earned the trust of both the battalion CO, the XO, and the same with the regiment. It made me a better leader in the cockpit when I returned because of my tour with the Cubs. And I know that's hard to explain why. It's just one of those things. I think it's a rite of passage that every single aviator should do. Spend that time with the grunts because you really, truly understand the whole MAGTAF integration, why it's important to do your job, understanding what is in their minds and their heads, and then taking that back to educate as an instructor pilot back in my squadron when I left the grunt, was the greatest thing I did. And that's, I'll just say that for my own personal growth, maybe not for my best, for my professional growth, because sometimes it's frowned upon in the aviation community to kind of leave the community, even though it's going to better yourself. I think some recognize that, but from the monitor standpoint, he's just looking at you as time out of the cockpit, right, and you're not progressing with quals, and could I have had more quals, and could I have been, but for my goals, it was one of the things I wanted to do. When I accepted my commission, I wanted to do three things. I wanted to go to the boat, wanted to do a MU, I wanted to do a factor, and I wanted to fly in combat, and I accomplished all those goals. And for me, that was the most important thing. And being a FAC was the highlight of my 10-year Marine Corps career.
My guest this morning is Seth Jordan. He's the chairman and founder of Dog Tag Brewing and the Dog Tag Brewing Foundation. So Seth, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about your migration to Montana, the starting of where does the brewery come from, and then we'll talk some about how you've developed that, and then your advice for veteran entrepreneurs, if that's all right.
Sounds great.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Thursdays, we talk transitions here on All Marine Radio. So sit back, relax, enjoy it. Great guests today with Matt Parker and now with Seth Jordan, guys with great experience and have transitioned well, and we're going to hear more from them. So sit back, relax, more of All Marine Radio on a Thursday coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Thursday, All Marine Radio. My guest is Seth Jordan, former Marine Huey pilot, a native of Rhode Island by way of Clemson, and now living in Bozeman, Montana. What's the best part of living in Bozeman, Seth?
Fly fishing.
Oh, really? You've taken it up, or had you done that in your life?
You know, I've been a fisherman my whole life, but fly fishing is kind of a technical skill that you have to learn. I'll tell you what, I have not mastered it, but I'm working hard on it. So it's just been a great experience, and I think that's why, quick plug, Montana is, in case you didn't know this, has the highest concentration of veterans in America in the lower 48. And, we only have 1 million folks here, but about 130,000 of them are veterans. And it's a really neat community, very tight. A lot of us get together, and a lot of us are working on a lot of different philanthropic enterprises, and I think that's what makes this kind of a special place.
Wow. So let's talk about you decide to get out of the Marine Corps. Is your wife from up there? What's your connection? Did you have a connection up there?
Yeah, my wife has family up here. Okay. So for all of my deployments, she came up here. And it was one of those things where after volunteering for 3 back-to-back-to-back deployments, all more dangerous than the next, she said, I get to pick what's next, and I had to honor that.
All right, so she picked Montana. All right, so but now you cast about, like everybody does, for something to do. And so how do you seize upon the idea of the brewery? Where does that come from?
Yeah, you know, I kind of fell into philanthropy by accident, and it was something that I wanted to do, but when I got up to Montana, I was putting together the idea for DogTag, and what I wanted to do was envision a business model that's very similar to the late actor Paul Newman, what he created with Newman's Own,
right,
and Newman's Own Foundation. So the spaghetti sauces and all that stuff that you've seen that they have that's on shelves where they donate all their profits to charity. Except we wanted to focus on beer and then the money to go towards impact projects that are selected by Gold Star families that are designed to teach the legacy of their loved one in their community and benefit their community and a way to turn their pain into purpose. So I started working on that, but then I got approached by a retired Marine colonel who was a chairman of a separate foundation that serviced wounded warriors, specifically from OIF and OEF, and those guys, gals who were very severely traumatically injured, taking them right from the hospitals and taking them on guided fly fishing tours up here in Montana, kind of getting them excited. So really got exposed to philanthropy about what it takes, you know, to run a nonprofit, about fundraising, working with donors, how to put on the events, the operational component, and use that to apply towards this beer social enterprise, which was designed to really be there about teaching the stories about America's fallen, raising a toast to them, and then finding out about what their families are doing and challenging Americans to get involved with that call to action. And, we're pleased that, just in a short amount of time that we have created this concept, what was on the idea of a back of a cocktail napkin, and then moved it to now that it's licensed to one of America's biggest beer companies, and then used to grow a social media presence of about 150,000 followers. And now we're in about 40 states right now with our product. And our nonprofit serves some great Gold Star families who are committed to teaching their loved ones' legacies in their community. And what is most special about the work that we do, yes, we're really a grant-making organization, and we provide grants, financial grants, to those causes that the families have created. But we also provide free consulting and advisory services to those families so that we can help them move the needle and push the ball down the field and accomplish their goals. So whether that's taking a look at what mission success looks like, board of director development, event strategies, fundraising techniques, just handling governance and compliance work that's very unique to the nonprofit world, or just providing that that confidence to pursue this in the first place is something that's special. And then one other thing I'd like to make note is that I'm on the board of directors, and everyone on our board of directors is a combat vet from Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's pretty special and unique. And it was another way for all of us to serve after we've taken off the uniform. And to your listeners, and I know that, you know, the focus of the work that you do with your program is, you know, finding purpose and helping those that are transitioning or dealing with depression or the effects of PTSD. And I just say that in my experience, the best thing, the best piece of advice that I give to a transitioning veteran is to get involved with philanthropy. And it doesn't have to be veteran-centric, but it's something that's going to help soften your heart, get you plugged into your community, get you a reason to get off that couch and get engaged with others, an opportunity to learn. You're really interacting with successful people in their community. That doesn't mean just because they're rich, but just because they're successful.
Right.
And I think it lends this, I think it lends itself to those that are interested on maybe potentially pursuing an entrepreneur path. So that's my really long answer. Sorry, I do that a lot.
No. It's all right, man. You give good answers. Talk to me about the cocktail napkin. The germination of that idea. Where did that come from?
You know, it was born out of my own experience. I wear a bracelet on my wrist. It's got seven names of Marines that were in my unit that were lost. And, you know, for me, I'm trying to take, you know, I try to take that experience and not to be sad or be rear facing, but to be forward facing and uplifting and saying, what can we do to lead meaningful and purposeful lives? And, when I was, this event happened in between my two Afghan deployments and, in my first Afghan deployment too, I had lost, a guy that I know and a couple others. We had a crash. Coming out of FOB Dwyer, if you recall Dwyer. They were supporting some special forces guys, and it was a midair and, just awesome Marines. And that was kind of the start. But then you just look back at my career, especially aviation, just had lost about two dozen guys that just were just great, great Marines and great people, great leaders. And it kind of bothered me that folks just didn't really know who they were. So the vision was, what if we could create a product that drove philanthropy, told the story, taught, you know, affected, you know, random Americans who normally would not know about these great Marines and soldiers, maybe invite them to get involved with the work that the families are doing and kind of be that glue or the nucleus to all this work. And then just kind of teach the next generation of Americans what it takes to defend a country. And I think and then again, combine that with just coming together to work on a purposeful project. I thought it would be something special, and it turned out to be. So we're happy with where we are and what we've accomplished. But again, it took that cocktail napkin, write it on the back. Here's the vision. Can we do it? A lot of people will tell you no. It was a big risk. How do you go about it? But I'm happy I took that chance.
You know, one of the things that I learned a long time ago, actually, I got out of the Marine Corps, I moved to North Dakota, and the first job I took in North Dakota was working for Special Olympics North Dakota. And one of the things that I found was the more that I gave, and I'm curious your experience, Seth, the more I got back. And it seems like an absolute ridiculous thing to say, but the more I extended myself, the more things that I got involved with, the richer my life became. I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yeah. You know, to totally plagiarize a very good friend of mine, Navy SEAL, who lives here with me, he runs a nonprofit, but he has a saying that we've kind of both co-adopted, is you can never go broke from trying to help too many people. And it's true. It'll come back. The more you put in, the more you get out of it. You know, I was just another captain who got out of the Marine Corps. Okay. We're a dime a dozen.
Right.
I did my part just like others, but how to break out and help others, it's been rewarding. And whether that's just being a mentor or just being building connections on, say, like professional networks like LinkedIn,
right,
and saying, hey, you got time. I mean, today, my schedule today and this whole week is filled with just this, hey, can we just connect for 30 minutes on a call? I got some questions for you. And yes, that eats into my day, but I love doing it, kind of what you described before, because I know that somehow I'm helping someone, and you just never know where that will turn around and help you.
Seth Jordan, my guest this morning, we're talking transitioning, and specifically we're talking about entrepreneurship. He is the founder of Dogtag Brewing Foundation, and unless you know the story of the napkin, you know, to be honest with you, I don't want to say it's just another foundation, because it's not, but when you realize that those are things that we all think about, our friends, right, the guys that we saw, you know, leave us badly wounded, sometimes dead, and those thoughts about, you know, nobody even knows about him. Nobody cares about him, and I think about him all the time. Seth has been able to leverage those thoughts into a very cool foundation that really enables Gold Star families to achieve their goal, because they're dealing with the same thoughts. And was the plan initially to link it to Gold Star Family, Seth, or simply to be philanthropic?
Yeah, it was. No, it was always to be it with a specific mission, a specific tie to Gold Star Family. So, so what we did was we were the first beverage company to use this new technology, which allows us to manipulate the line art data on each one of the cans. So when you buy a six pack of beer, each one of the beers is dedicated to a different fallen warrior. And it has a dog tag with his name, his rank, where he's from. You know, say he was with 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, it says 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, first Mardiv, second Mardiv. And it's just, the idea here is to say the name out loud. It's a toast. It's kind of very similar to the experience that we had in the Marine Corps mess nights and Marine Corps birthday ball celebrations. We always did a toast that before we did anything in an organized drinking event. And that's what I call them, really. That's what they are. But to, you know, pay homage, raise a toast, reflect. And I think our view on death is a little bit different as servicemen. Is that, you know, although we're sad that they're gone, we're more proud to have known them in service. And I think it really affects why we live our life. And I think that, you know, again, back to the principle with the family, you know, they feel left behind. And I think as a country, we do a lot. There's 45,000 nonprofits. There's a ton of them out there helping wounded warriors and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's great. Sometimes it's subtraction by addition, because there's just so many out there in this sea of nonprofits. But there's very few doing anything for Gold Star Family. And I think we just give them a folded flag and we cut them a salute. And we always say things like, we'll never forget. But the reality is people move on. People get stationed in other places. People get married. They have families. And then people in their own community just don't know. And I think what they enjoy here is that when we make a can for someone, it's like 20,000 or 30,000 cans. And those cans for each individual warrior go all across the country. And the age of social media, and although that's not everything, I get it. But in the age of social media, someone can take a, you know, quick pic and say, hey, mama, I'm thinking about you. I'm in California, but I know that you're in Pennsylvania and you're thinking, and I want you to know I'm thinking about your son.
Right.
And that means so much to these families. You just cannot put a price tag on that. And I think that's what we're happy about, is just, they just want to know that people cared, and that their biggest fear, and I've worked with over 700 Gold Star families. That doesn't make me an expert, but talking on the phone with them, their biggest fear, the resounding number one, is that people will forget who their loved one was. And I think that we're just doing our small part, but it's really about our fellow Americans getting involved with that process, because we can't do it alone. I mean, we can make beers all day long, but we need to raise the money. We can, you know, support it, but Americans need to show that they care now more than ever, especially with all the stuff going on in our country. I think it's important to them.
Email question for you, Seth. Hey, Mac, what an awesome, awesome endeavor that Seth has going on, and I have a question for him. I think a lot of us have entrepreneur ideas, Is there a secret, or at least the basics as he would define them, to taking something that you have in your head and making it real? So?
Yeah. Is that so? So you're.
What's the secret?
What was the question?
Yeah.
There's no secret. Well, I'll tell you what. There's one common secret. It's hard work. Okay. And I think that that's why veterans, we're positioned uniquely. We've been tested. And it's okay. I think but the inverse to that, just a little guidance for veterans here, is that because we're used to being successful, because we're used to always achieving the mission, I think they're always afraid that they might fail. And I would just say that entrepreneurship is hard. The stats are there against you, that you might fail, and that's okay. Now, I understand that there's money involved and people don't want to risk losing money on whatever venture they're going to pursue, but you will definitely learn from that experience. And if you go about it smart, the other secret is you have to have strong mentors and advisors. You can't do it alone. I said this recently in a different podcast that I had a conversation with the narrator. Describe me a scenario in your military career where you ever did anything by yourself. So why would we think that going into business, we would do this all alone and by ourselves? And I think that's where I think sometimes veterans fail, that they feel like they can't ask for help, or that they don't enjoy the word networking because it's seen as sleazy or whatever. You just have to network. It's just like you do in the Marine Corps. You know, it's just like, you know, you get in the battalion and you're like, hey, you got to know the S2 or you got to know the supply guy who can hook you up with the thing that you need. And you need to talk to the Lago guy who's going to hook you up with, a ride out to Fob X. You know what I mean? You just got to learn how to network. And I think that the rest, you put in the hard work and do your homework, you'll be prepared to take on whatever you think is important.
Next email question. Hey, Mac, money seems to be a huge issue. I'm curious, how did Seth finance his venture? Did he self-finance originally? Did he have partners? Did he go to the bank to get a loan? Is he independently wealthy, being a Clemson guy? how did he do it?
Yeah, no, I devoted some of the money I saved up over all my deployments to kind of get it up and going. I wanted to test it in beta mode, and see if they had legs. You know, what we knew was to scale it for the large impact across the country we needed, we needed to, partner with someone. So that's where, the partnership with PAFS comes in, and we're blessed for that. I had met the owner, PAFS, and told him about the idea, and we had a little bit of traction. And that's where we said, you know, we need you to help be our production distribution partner. So they do all the legwork, and then we get our royalty. So if you watch Shark Tank, you know, like, right, the guys are always talking about, we need royalty, and that's the route that we took. But I would say that I did examine all different options, SBA loans, which I think are very friendly for veterans. I am not independently wealthy. I'd love to report that, but it's not true. I would say the one thing I would say to the person who posed the question and to your listeners is that the one mistake that I did, and it worked out okay for me, but I did invest a lot of my own money that I had saved. And I think that you do need to put up some of your own money because it makes you invested, if you will. But I think that at the same time, I wouldn't put that much risk. I would spread that risk. Don't be afraid to take on debt. I would approach it with the lending programs that are out there with banks and the SBA. And I would do a combination of things. And that's what I would offer.
That's good. That's good advice. We got two more questions, and then I'll let you go, Seth, if you don't mind. First of all, I hope you don't mind coming back and doing this again, because we're just kind of scratching, I think, on the surface of your expertise. So I hope you don't mind becoming. While you might not be a regular on All Marine Radio, you certainly, like Justin is, you'll certainly darken its doorstep on a regular basis. When you go talk to entrepreneurs, and this is kind of the email, hey Mac, I heard you mention that you were introduced to Seth by Justin Constantine. I know Justin does work for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and goes out and speaks about entrepreneurship. I'm curious about Seth's message when he speaks. So, Seth, what's your message?
No, my message, well, I don't have a crafted message, but I'll tell you what, I am very involved with helping any veteran who wants to pursue his or her own business. And I think it's very important to this country. And I'll just say this real quick. You know, my reasoning for going into business was, you know, when the guys came home from World War II, and, you know, a lot of people talk about being the greatest generation, they were not only great because of what they did on the battlefield and how they raised their hands and went forward to fight in the, you know, the Pacific and Europe, but when they came home, 50% of them started a business. And those guys touched the fabric of this country. They really did. And they were, you know, managers, leaders, bosses, you know, business owners, and they really affected how we were as a country. And fast forward to now, you know, you got the stats. There's over 2 million veterans that served OIF, OEF. And I think the stat right now is 4.5% of veterans since post 9/11 have started a business. And that's dangerous. And I'll say it's dangerous because we're becoming – we're going to become obsolete as a component to this country if we're not involved when we come back. We need to be leaders again, whether it's in the nonprofit world, whether it's in the civic level, whether it's in politics, or whether it's in business, which I think is the best way. We should be doing that. And I think that's why a lot of Americans want to support us. We should not be looking to take the job somewhere else because it's easy. If they have an idea and they think that they can provide something of value, they should pursue it, and that's my two cents. And I think that's why I think, you know, when Justin speaks, and I can't speak for Justin, but he does a lot of different things and a lot of great things
right.
As a motivational speaker. But, you know, I think we should. And that whole point is how are we going to impact the next one to two generations of Americans? Because we're about to become what Great Britain is, or England. I love the Brits. We served together in Helmand. But I'll tell you what. The people in England do not respect their soldiers. And here they were, a great island nation of warriors defending, you know, for generations, and to include in what they did in World War II, up against all odds. And now, you know, they're like considered like the bottom of the class, you know, and I think that that's sad. And America, if we think that we're not too far behind, they're sadly, I think we can be mistaken if we're not out there leading. And I think that that's why, when we hear issues about transition and stuff, get out there, like what I said before. Get involved with philanthropy. Go be a leader. Your leadership skills translate very well back into whatever community you're going to go to. It doesn't have to be veteran-related. It could be working with kids after school or, you know, cancer recovery, whatever. It's whatever touches their heart, but use that as a leadership. Be on the board. Be on the fundraising committee. Be involved in the operational component. And let others see us as civic assets. So that's my little tangent.
I like the tangent, by the way. The you know, it. Have you ever heard the term post-traumatic growth?
I have. General Mattis is a big proponent, and I think maybe even the author of that. But I think and I've had the pleasure to speak with him privately on a phone, and we shared some of those sentiments. And I do believe that we grow from our experiences. Although they're terrible, they actually make us better. I do believe that.
I heard it first in a speech that he gave, and I said, what is that? And he didn't originate it, but he's kind of blown it up. And I had the pleasure to work for him. I was his staff sec in Ramadi in 2004. And so, you know, worked with him on a daily basis. And so when he said it, I thought I should probably investigate that. And so I've had guys from a place called Boulder Crest Retreat who are doing great
yep.
work. You know of them too. This is awesome. So those guys.
I know Ken Falk, their founder.
Ken was on for almost 2 hours one day talking about how he got there, his vision and whatnot. And so we here at All Marine Radio are huge proponents of, and it's kind of almost a chip on your shoulder kind of thing. You know, okay, so the greatest generation, they come back and there's none of these services that we're so fortunate to have for them. It's just suck it up and get after it, stuff it in the closet, deal with it. You know, and maybe go to the VFW or the Legion and hang out with guys. But otherwise, you got to move on with life. There was none of what we have now. And so it's kind of interesting. It's like, so when you hear it, it's like, okay, so they built the world that we live in today. And so, but we're disabled by the same experience. Not only no, but hell no, man. If they can do it, we can't. And so I think it's almost a little bit of a challenge to us. Hey, look, there's a great history in this nation of veterans leading, in particular combat veterans, coming home with that experience, knowing how fortunate you are to be alive, how fortunate you are to live in a country like the United States of America, and get out there and make a difference. And I love those horizontal themes that run through that of unselfishness, giving, involvement, and then the greater things in life coming in your direction. And so it's all the things that you're saying, Seth, and that can be part of your life, but it's not going to come to you by accident. You're going to have to get out there and fight for it, and you're going to fight for happiness, fight for success, and fight to be good. So I love that message, and I think it's a little bit disturbing initially I won't say disturbing is probably the wrong word, because I know my eyebrows both like came together and went down when he said post-traumatic growth. I went, what did he say? I've never heard that term. What is it? And because I believe the quote was, I don't choose to look at it like that. I choose to embrace post-traumatic growth. You can use that experience to grow. And I went, there it is, man. There it is. There's the challenge. And we've been up for every other challenge. We certainly can be up for this one. Seth, give me one more question, and then I will let you go. I'll read an email question. Hey, Mac, if we're interested on where we can buy Seth's beer, how we can get a hold to drink it for different events, I would certainly love to have my beer drinking habit support Gold Star families. How do we do it?
Sure. You can go to our website, dogtagbrewing.org, and there's a beer page. You click on that, and then there's a beer finder app. You just type in your zip code, and you can put in the radius, and then it populates with pin drops and where the closest account is. We're in about 40 states, but that looks like a cell phone coverage map of, like, the country. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not necessarily right in your backyard. The best way to do it is that. And I think that they can pose questions to us at our office, and they go to the website and send us a – but – we appreciate everyone to involve. The beer is really good, too. I mean, we haven't gotten into the beer component, but, like, the beer is just great, drinking lawnmower beer, patio pounder beer, as we call it. It's fun just to have with others. And when we bring it to events, it's just kind of a different component. And I think people get excited, like, hey, this beer has all this energy inside of it and what it can stand for. And, again, like, you know, we can't bring these guys back, but we can control how they're remembered and what we can do in their name. And I think that's what people enjoy the most. So thank you, your listener, for sending in the email question. It means a lot. And we just ask folks, if you believe in the work that we're doing, join the movement. There's a spot for everyone on this team.
My guest this morning, Seth Jordan. Seth, first of all, can't articulate words. Those of us who've lost friends and have Gold Star families as part of our extended families, we know that's a rough road. And you guys are making it a little bit better. So want to say congratulations to you for what you do. God bless you for the work that you do and how you're going about doing it. And any time that we can be of any value to you or anybody working with you, please don't hesitate to give us a call And I will bug you in the future when we talk entrepreneur stuff to come back on, share your experience, because it's an awesome one. It's a great one. It's a purpose-filled one. And you're almost like the poster child for transitioning, for entrepreneurs, doing it right. And I know it, your transition hasn't been perfect, but you've done a lot of great stuff. And and thank you for doing this morning.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity. Anytime I get an opportunity to serve and speak with others, it means a lot. So Semper Fidelis, and I appreciate it.
All right, Seth. Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye now.
All right. That is, wow. What a story, huh? What a story. The on the back of a napkin. And then to have corporations embrace it and facilitate it happening. So, wow, that's pretty impressive. That is Seth Jordan. He's a former Huey pilot, United States Marine Corps, with combat deployments to Afghanistan, both with 27 and as a pilot. So I think he said HMLA 267 and one other squadron that I'd be remiss if I tried to enunciate. So my thanks to him for coming on. The gunner's having phone issues, so we're going to take a quick break. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at BattleMug.com, home of the one and only Battle Mug. The Battle Mug starts as a 10-pound block of aluminum. After it's milled, machined, and anodized, it's ready for you to make your own. The Picatinny rails on your on the side allow you to do that, and the same rails that were on your weapon. So anything you can put on your weapon, if you're going to the field, you can put on your mug. That's right. Think about it. And if you're keeping it in the office, like I tend to do, you can buy Marine Corps emblem, you can buy American flag, you can buy other symbols, unit symbols, and things like that. You can check out the whole line of products at battlemug.com. And they have other mugs and other devices that are truly unique for people that have been in the military, particularly Marines. You'll love them. Trust me. Check them all out at BattleMug.com. Use the promo code Marine for 15% off. And BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company made entirely in the United States. We're going to take a break when we come back. Hopefully the gunner joins us here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.